and just give people a chance because there's a lot of potential out there. You know, a lot of people that could be fantastic with the right coaching. It's just, you know, there's nothing around in their country, around their cities. You know, and it's tough for, you know, people get discouraged. So I just want to help them out a lot. That's really what I've been doing with my online stuff.
Welcome to another Fight Map interview. My name is Brad West. Thank you so much for joining me. I've got an incredible guest today. I was surfing around YouTube about a year ago, and I saw this video. This guy has this 700-page manual, this jiu-jitsu journal that he kept. And as soon as I saw that video, I thought, wow, I've got to get that guy on the show. And so I was doing a little bit of research. After watching the video, I looked up who it was. It was Jeff Joslin. I knew he had been in the UFC, but I really didn't know his background. So I'm digging, you know, trying to find his story, trying to find his background and some other stuff we can talk about besides the journal. And his story is incredibly inspiring. If you don't know Jeff Joslin, get yourself over to jeffjoslinmma.com and read about it. We did talk a little bit in the interview about his background, but I'll give you the short version here. Essentially, he was born in Ontario, Canada, relatively small town. There was no big name MMA team there. There was no jiu-jitsu instruction. So he had to start traveling to find a gym, try to find some techniques. His father started a karate school back in the late 60s. So he would go someplace, learn some moves, and he would bring them back to his gym, throw the mats down, and practice what he'd learned when he was traveling. So from those humble beginnings, he made it all the way to the UFC. And I thought that was incredibly inspiring, so I wanted to talk to him about that. He recently ran an MMA show in Hamilton called Slammer and the Hammer. We talked a little bit about that in the interview. I had some technical problems, and I had to cut that part out of the last bit of the interview. But we did talk a little bit about that, and you'll hear a little bit of that. And but before that, though, what the cool part about the interview, the bulk of the interview, is, you know, he was in a situation where he didn't have a big name team. So I wanted to find out, you know, what if someone else is in the same boat, how can they replicate what he replicated, right? If you're out there training in your garage, you're trying to, you know, figure this out, you want to get into the big leagues, how do you do it? Can you replicate what he did? And so we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, what he did and how he got into it and what advice he has and what he's doing to help people that are in the same boat as him. And we did start off with a little bit of history, a little bit of background about where he got started.
Actually, it was my dad's school. My father, Rick Joslin, opened the school back in 1967. So it's been in our city a long time. So growing up, I started training when I was 5 years old. So I had a coach for karate and kickboxing, which my dad was into. He began with karate. He got his black belt in like 18 months, and he's one of the first guys that went into full contact karate when kickboxing first kind of came out of the karate in North America. So he had a team of undefeated guys there, and he always enjoyed the sparring aspect of martial arts more. So he started training me in when I was very young, mm-hmm. and then that progressed. I stopped for a few years to play hockey, you know, and then when I came back on my own after almost getting in a fight in high school, or actually I did get in a fight in high school, I came back and I ended up training real serious because it was my choice at that time to get into it. So
as a teen, I trained a lot. Stand-up training, yeah, at that time.
Yeah, exactly. So that was, you know, just did that for many years and really learned how to focus and develop skills and compete against people. And then when the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu came along, it was really something that I didn't even want to do. It was the Gracies, and Royce Gracie was winning the UFC, and you know, I always wanted to see him get knocked out by a striker, being a striker myself. And someone that actually my dad is funny. He asked me, said, Jeff, we got to start doing this jiu-jitsu stuff. And he threw me a book to read on small circle jiu-jitsu. I'm like, Dad, get that out of here. I don't want to do jiu-jitsu. I want to punch people. You know, punch and kick. And then it wasn't until probably a few months later that one of my students brought in a very beginner set of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which I think it was Renzo Gracie and Craig Kukuk, I think. I'm not even sure how to pronounce it. It was the first American black belt, and they had a set called just Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I think. Mm-hmm. And I watched the first tape, and then it was over. I was like, man, this is crazy. With my addictive personality, I just started practicing the moves, and then we ended up starting a class just with our black belts, like our karate black belts and our kickboxing guys. Just started a small class on the side with some mats. And since I had, you know, two or three moves and more than everybody else, I was the teacher.
So how was that conversation when you went to a bunch of kickboxers and said, hey, we want to wrestle? What was their reaction?
Well, you know, they listened. I was already their instructor for other martial arts and stuff. So they, you know, a lot of people took to it really well. And some people did it for a bit and then it wasn't for them. And other people stuck with me and doing the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for a long time. We actually used to split the gym. We would cut the gym in half and take the kickboxer space and put mats down and do jiu-jitsu for an hour. But it was very rudimentary, very beginner. We didn't really know how to run classes because, again, there was no Brazilians up here. There was nobody with even a blue belt up here at the time in all of Canada.
So you, for the first while, you just learned from the videotapes and then practiced what you learned in the academy.
Exactly. So I would take two or three moves and I would teach them that day, and I too would be practicing them at the same time because I was new as well. This was probably back in 1993 or 1994. So it was a long time ago. And then as my skills progressed and stuff and I got a little bit of a base, I found I was competing in karate, but one day a guy tried to really go hard with me in a karate match and tried to pull my headgear off and was really making it a scrappy fight in Chicago. And all of a sudden I was unmounted on top of him. And I realized, you know, this is, you know, the guy really wanted to fight, but when I took him down, he was like screaming, get him off me, get him off me. And then I realized how effective this stuff could actually be, you know, if I got even better. So I kind of backed off the karate competitions and got into training solely in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for a while.
Yeah. So when did you first go seek out a black belt coach?
It was probably like a lot of the Brazilians started to come up to the United States, but unfortunately they were all, you know, down low in the south, right, where it was a lot warmer, I'm sure, coming up to where there's snow is can be a little traumatic for the guys that have grown up in Brazil. But I noticed Carlson Gracie Jr. was in Chicago, and that was the closest place. So I just said one day, probably 3 or 4 years into training from tapes, you know, 3 or 4 years later, I decided to make a trip to Chicago with my brother and some of his friends. And I was the only one training, but they would kind of hang out in Chicago and I would train at Carlson Gracie Jr. School. So I ended up going there for about a week, maybe 2 weeks the first time. And then I really got a good feel on how classes were structured. That was the biggest thing. So I saw how they did their warm-ups and really they rolled a lot. They did a lot more rolling than I thought, because I had never seen an authentic Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class at the time. And I ended up going with probably their best blue belt at the school. And I held my own, actually. The first time I rolled, I held my own. I didn't get tapped out in 5 minutes. You know, I wasn't getting much offense going, but I was surviving and you know, doing all right, you know, just from the videotape training. So
when
I survived the 5 minutes, they made me go again with them, though, because they knew I was getting tired. And he ended up catching me the second round of the submission. So it was great. It was a really eye-opening experience. They were very, very tough. And then I just came back with a new look on the sport, and we started incorporating 5 to 6-7 minute rounds when we're rolling, which was, you know, like I found out quickly, it was very, very tiring. And then we started rolling like that and training like that. You know, it's funny because when we started, we didn't have no clue. When we tapped the guy out, we got up and sat back down on the wall and didn't roll anymore. So you might be the instructor. I might tap the guy out in 45 seconds and the match is over. Okay, go chill out. But when I was in rolling in Chicago, all of a sudden it's like, okay, someone taps you, just keep going. And it's like, whoa, this is exhausting. So that was a lot of fun. But when we came back, then the gains were, we made much quicker gains when I came back because I had a better feel for how to really structure things. And of course, I learned some cool techniques as well. So,
so
and that progressed and we went, go ahead.
So you went over there for 2 weeks straight. Was that pretty common when you would go train? You travel somewhere and train and you would stay for a long time, or would you only go on occasion for like say 2 days, go for the weekend, you know, and then come back with some techniques?
Usually I'd go for at least a week. You know, being at that age where you're 20, you really have no responsibilities at all, really.
Yeah.
So you can get up and do whatever you want. You know, I could have went for a longer amount of time, but I went back again to Chicago probably maybe 6 months later or something like that. And, then trained again with that school, And I was set to get my blue belt under them, actually. And unfortunately, it didn't happen because I guess they had a grading day where all the guys got it. And I was told that I'd be able to get my blue belt. But then they said I had to come back on the grading day because it wasn't quite fair for the other guys to have to wait and I'd be able to test for my blue belt. And unfortunately, it just didn't happen. I didn't end up getting back there. Just some miscommunications. And I ended up eventually finding Jack Array at his school in Atlanta, Georgia.
So you went down, you would travel to Atlanta the same way you traveled to Chicago?
Actually, when I was in Chicago, I met a doctor, I believe, and he had traveled all over North America for his job. And I asked him, I said, what's the best, because he'd been in all these schools. I said, what's one of your favorite Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools that you visited? And he said, Jack Array in Atlanta. And I'd never heard of him before. And so when I got back and things didn't work out with the Chicago thing, just by bad luck, I ended up searching and finding Jack Array School online. So we made another trip, and about four or five of us, some of my students, we all went down together and trained there for a week, and it was awesome. You know, they treated me so. What was really nice about Jack Array School is they treated me like I was part of their team right from the first day. So when I was rolling with their guys, they weren't actually cheering the other guy on. They were cheering me on sometimes. So we had a little mini tournament. They were like, come on, get him, Canadian, get him. And I'm like, it's one of their own, you know? So that was like, that was so warm and inviting. And the skills, they were very, very tough. You know, they had a lot of, at that time, blue belts probably were the highest belts, in United States and stuff. So they had some really tough blue belts. And I was a white belt at the time. And we had some tough roles, really tough guys. Yeah. And I ended up getting my blue. I think I got my blue belt on my first visit there. That was when I got my blue belt, probably in 1997 or something like that.
Huh. So what makes, the Alliance and Master Team, the pretty powerhouse team, what makes their, you've done a lot of traveling, what makes their gym so much better than everybody else's? Why are they so successful in tournaments? What's their secret over there?
I don't think they have, a great network in Brazil. A lot of great instructors, and they train hard. Everybody I've met that is at a very high level, they train with that same intensity that you need to become a champion. So just a great system, a great network of schools and people that are all dedicated to becoming the best they can be.
When you go to these schools, right, you go to Chicago or you go to Atlanta or whatever, what do you... like a lot of guys, they go to a seminar or something like this, and they're hoping to get something from this. They want to take some notes. They want to do something so that they can get their money's worth. They can remember what they did at that seminar. And I'm sure that you had the same thing when you would go train, when you would travel somewhere to train, you trying to remember stuff, trying to make sure that you, got your money's worth when you were there, got the techniques under your belt so you could bring them back to your own academy. How do you do that? How do you make sure that you get the information that you were there to get?
You're exactly right. I couldn't at that time afford to let anything slip by because I might not see it again in terms of the detail from an instructor. I go back home and I become my own teacher back then. And so I just take notes. I would just take a pad of paper and a pen, and I would write notes pretty much immediately after I had the technique. And I would write them. The biggest thing is I had to write them in with such detail that I would never miss one little thing, because in jiu-jitsu and actually in boxing and Muay Thai and any martial art, one detail missing is failure on the technique. You're gonna have a less effective technique. So I actually had to write, use your left hand, use your right hand, and the littlest things, even if I thought that I would easily remember it, which I would probably for a week, but the next, a month later, I would forget that little detail. And then if that one little detail is missing, I wasn't sure which hand or which angle, I'd be in trouble. So I really had to put the work in when I was writing it, and that was well worth it in the end. So, because sometimes you're writing notes and you're just like, oh, you kind of get it fast because you think you remember small things, but you need to take the time to write every single thing that you need to know when you're going back and practicing it.
Yeah. So would you ever add anything else? I'm thinking, if I just write something down, jiu-jitsu's, kind of hard. If we were to try to describe someone a move right now, when audio was the only thing that they had, it's going to be pretty difficult to learn jiu-jitsu, from audio tapes. Mm-hmm. That's why they have videotapes, right? So would you put any photos or any kind of drawings into your notes, or would you just rely on text?
Not really, because my notes would remind me of it and would remind me of me practicing it.
So as long as you had done it, then it was sufficient. Yeah. It would recall, your memory would come back as you read your notes.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody else could learn from my notes. Because, you know, that's why I could never sell the book or the big book that we were talking about before. But it's, it was by notes, and that would refresh my memories. And it's funny because even now, 15, 20 years later, I can still remember certain moves that I learned. I could tell you what spot I was in the gym, where I was, who was teaching me. It's pretty wild. In my mind, I don't know. Sometimes things get become memorized in a kind of a weird way. I've always had a kind of a good memory, though. Went through school and stuff. You know, I didn't do too well in English and some of those subjects where you had to actually read the books and stuff. I was kind of lazy. I was thinking about my next karate belt, but it gave me, my memory helped me a lot. I was able to pass my courses, I think, a lot based on that. So that helped me with jiu-jitsu as well.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that 700-page journal. That thing is massive. The video that I saw of it, I was like, you turned page after page after page. And how do you make something that big useful? How do you remember all those?
You have to have a lot of time, first of all. And then you can't have a girlfriend or anything like that. You know, back in high school, I was kind of a little bit obsessive with things that I did. You know, first it was, actually I was in a hip-hop group and kind of went crazy focusing on that and working on, we had a little open for someone in the concert and a lot of fun, but I was so focused on whatever I did. So it was that. Then when I got into martial arts and the jiu-jitsu, I became so pumped up about the jiu-jitsu that I just couldn't get enough. I was watching the tapes and studying them. So, you know, it was tough for me to watch a tape and then go downstairs and practice the technique without really some type of reference tool. So I just sat down in front of my computer, popped on a word processor, and then I started watching a video. And as I watched the video, I wrote every single detail, just like my own notes from seminars and stuff, about what the instructor was doing, where he put his hands, and I would just write every single technique. So I went through at that time. It wasn't just one set I had. Now it was Pedro Carvalho had a set come out, and that was an awesome one. Big eye opener. So that was a whole set of techniques. So I ended up having probably, 400 or 500 techniques written down, broken down, word by word, movement by movement. So that started to build the volume there that I created to help me train. So then it just progressed. More tapes came out, different sets. I got pretty much every one of them. And I didn't just watch them. I would break them down into the system. So what was really cool is one tape showed a mount attack, maybe another tape that I got 6 months later had the defense. So in my book, I would put them in the same area. So I would put the attack and the defense. I wouldn't even really remember what tape it was, but they started to create a really fluid system where it had attacks and defenses and different things that I had pulled from all my online instructors that didn't even know they were teaching me. Hmm. Sorry, not online, on tape.
Right. You know what I tried to do a while ago? And this is, I wasn't working with VHS. I had DVDs, and I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to strip. I'm going to watch these. I'm going to find the techniques that kind of fit into my game. And I'm going to pull the file off of the DVD, and I'll cut out that technique, and then I'll take the ones from the other DVDs, and I'll put them all together, and I'll just make my own DVD of the moves that I'm working on right now. And I realized that I really suck at editing video, and that didn't come to fruition. But with so many moves, how do you pick which ones are the ones like that you're working on now? And how do you, you can't know 700 pages of material, or at least practice it on the mat every day,
back then I didn't really have a game. I was pretty new and I was studying the tapes, and maybe I was a white belt with a couple years experience, or, I think I was doing it when I was a blue belt as well. But it's, you just try to study everything. And at first I thought jiu-jitsu was like, this is jiu-jitsu, bam, you have to know everything. And, now looking back, it's kind of crazy, but, I didn't know. Like, you have a course, you have to know, this, and then you're a black belt. So I thought it was like, you have to know every single thing that's out there. So what did Jeff do? Study like never went out, and never had the girlfriend, just trained all the time like a maniac. And, it's paid off a lot, but, I definitely used a lot of time in working on the techniques. And what I would do is my students, I would get together with them in the morning and outside of class and practice for 2 hours every morning, pretty much, or a couple times a week. But I wouldn't use the same student every day because they would burn out.
Yeah.
They didn't have the fire to do that every day. So I'd take a different student every day, and I would do 2 hours with him, 2 hours with the next guy, 2 hours the next day, because I lived on top of the gym. So I had a really quick access to get there. And I would just pick maybe 8 techniques, 10 techniques, maybe too many at the time, it seems now, but I would just do probably cycle through 8 techniques for 2 hours, and then the next day do it, and the next day do it. So it really, the techniques, I started to become, you know, more understanding of the art. The only thing I was missing was the tough training partners that were able to push me and tap me out, and because I was had the more knowledge, and it was growing very fast in comparison to my own students.
Yeah.
At that time, yeah.
You know what? I wonder about that though, because you know, Hodger Gracie, he moved to London, and there wasn't a lot of people. There's not a lot of people that can push Hodger anyway, but there certainly wasn't anyone in London at that when he first moved there that could push him. And then so he trained most of the year over there. Came, won the worlds after that. And, you know, mm-hmm. he only had white belts and blue belts to work with during that time. And, you know, I've got a friend that lives over here in Thailand with me, and he opened a gym in, because there wasn't a gym close to him. So he decided he was going to get some mats and basically make his own little garage training. And he had some friends come over, and he's way bigger and way better than, you know, than all the people he trains with. Pretty similar, it sounds mm-hmm. like, to your story. And he, even with that, you know, not having someone push him, progress so fast that I kind of wonder if having people that you can, where you can concentrate on the movements, you know, you don't have to worry about constantly escaping and, oh, he's, you know, he passed my guard again. Oh, he's on my back again. You know, you don't have to worry about that. And you get to work on what you want to work on every day. And I wonder if that helped you back in the day.
Well, your attacks get really, really good. I'll tell you that. They get very good. And sometimes your defense is, well, that's really where you have to be smart. When you are the top dog at your school, you have to let your opponents get you in bad situations. You can't just dominate them all the time with your attacks. Your attacks will get good. And what I'll say, you know, you could be a brown belt in attacks, but all of a sudden someone catches you in a triangle, catches you in this, and you're like a blue belt in escapes. Mm. And then sometimes you have white belts that are phenomenal with escapes because they get their butt kicked all the time. So they're good at escaping. So what I had to do, and it was a rough lesson actually I learned when I was a brown belt. I had, I won the Arnold's Arnold Classic. I won the Arnold Gracie Classic in Columbus, Ohio. I won my division, and I won the absolute. And I was going for a cash prize, and I end up getting caught in a triangle choke in the first 10 seconds. I went for a move and ended up stuck in a triangle. And I really panicked. I was like, well, you know, I wasn't used to being there. So if I was only getting caught in one triangle a month in training,
yeah,
it just, I wasn't really, my attacks were boom, 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 boom. But then my escape was like, oh no, I'm in trouble. So I ended up having to tap out for the, you know, I missed the cash prize. I think it was $500, but it taught me a valuable lesson. I went back and I started allowing some of my students to get me in triangles, really tight triangles, and I really worked on my escapes over and over and over again. And it became actually really fun because it took the pressure off me in training. I didn't have to just attack. I could, you know, allow them to get me into a move and then work different escapes. And, you know, when you get that new movement and that new escape and you pull it off, it's just as rewarding as getting a submission hold on somebody because you got out of their choke. And they had fun too because my students were able to say, almost choke me. And sometimes potentially, yeah, maybe tap me out too sometimes because I was working my new escape, right? So yeah. It's really helped me a lot. It was a lesson, a very important lesson that I had to learn. And then my defense became much tougher after that.
Hmm. So what's a good split for that then? If you do open some, you know, like in your case, you had your own kind of training program going on there. You were the top dog. Someone like my friend, he's the top guy there. What's a good... You know, you can't neglect your attacks. You know, then you'll just be the opposite. You'll be a brown belt in escaping, but a blue belt in attacking, and that's no good either. So, yep. Is it just a 50-50 split, or is there some mix you'd recommend?
Yeah, I'd say it depends. When you're away from a tournament time, or you're not competing, I would say, you know, 50-50 is good. Or it depends on the mood you're that day. You know, this day, okay, I'm in a little bit more aggressive mood. I'm going to put you down 80% of the time and allow you to get back in the game 20% of the time. And this is when you are tougher than your students or tougher than your training partners. Even if you're just the best guy in the class, maybe just your instructor can push you. You have to do the same thing. Or if you're better than 75% of the class, you're going to have to do it a lot as well. So, you know, I would say just mix it up. You know, sometimes the whole class 20% of the time attack, and just let them attack you 80% of the time and work all your defenses, all your escapes, all your prevention. And I think it can be very, very useful. And it's a lot of fun too. So And it allows those guys, no one wants to get the crap beat out of them. You want your student, you want your students to stay, and you want your training partners to enjoy rolling with you. So let them in the game a little bit. Play just above their level sometimes. So I think that's oh, when the tournament comes up, MMA fight's coming up. Get ready. I'm not going to give it. That's it. We're turning it on because you don't want to build develop a bad habit of being too passive and not aggressive enough. So you need to turn it up when it's time.
Yeah. So back to this journal. Does that journaling work? I understand how that works for jiu-jitsu. I can picture myself getting off the mat, writing down, you know, the moves, put your hand here, step over his leg, you know, underhook or whatever. But does that work for striking arts? Can this work for MMA or Muay Thai and stuff like that?
Definitely. I think it works very well. And it's something that I've done as well in that. So, you know, when I made a transformation kind of from karate kickboxing to boxing back in maybe, I don't know, many years ago. So I did the same thing with that. So I applied those same principles to learning how to become a boxer because boxing was very slick and I had a fantastic coach in Vito Brancaccio from Mississauga and there was so much detail. And I think that's really, people don't realize the detail in the punching is very, very, very important. People think a punch is a punch and you just punch and you aim and you hit hard and you try to hit hard and it's not like that. It's as technical, I would say, as ground fighting. It's crazy, but you need the right coach to feel the right technique. And when you get that right technique, you're like, whoa, this is a different world. So I took so many notes in my striking training and the stuff I've learned in boxing and Muay Thai stuff and did the exact same thing that gave me success in jiu-jitsu. So it became just as addictive and just as technical and required just as much drilling. So I think it can work in anything. And, you know, the striking, the details I had gave me a tremendous advantage in mixed martial arts.
We know I most jiu-jitsu schools, they have this same kind of structure, right? You do a warm up, the coach shows a couple of moves, you drill the moves, and then there's open mat or some type of, you know, sparring after that. And so there's, you know, there's a specific time in that curriculum where you could jot down notes, right? You could say what the move was. But my experience with boxing and with Muay Thai is it's not really like that. You're with your pad holder and you're going, you know, for a couple rounds or whatever. And then you got gloves on too. You got to get somebody to take your gloves off for you and all this. But if you're going to take your notes, how did that work out when you were taking notes for boxing?
You just do it later. You do it later. You do it. You think about your moves on the drive home. You take the time to sit down and do it later. You know, your moves, even in jiu-jitsu, you don't have to do it right away. Look a little bit like a little nerdy if you're running off the mat and writing stuff down. Excuse me, you just got me in that choke. I got to write something down. No, you wait till later. And sometimes that's a good challenge too. If you wait till later, you really have to think back and get the details. And just the fact of writing things down, it's just as good as practicing it. Pretty much visualization is very close to actually practicing physically the technique. So rewriting them is just like another training session. So whether it takes half an hour, that's half an hour extra invested into your training. So you do it when you can. And then when you read them again, it's like training again. So you read, you look over the notes. And that's why I didn't get a lot of things done outside of martial arts. Because I was always reading and writing. And, you know, my wife always complains I can't fix anything around the house. But if anybody ever breaks in, he's in a lot of trouble. I'm ready.
Because it's always on your mind, right?
Yeah, you just develop that skill. And, you know, and when you're so focused on one thing, a lot of other things kind of fall to the wayside, which kind of sucks. But you get to be strong in the area that's you're passionate about.
Yeah, focus on it for a while. Mm-hmm. So you recently, I don't know how recently it was. I've only seen it recently, the MMA Quick Start Guide. You wrote this guide for people that are getting into MMA for the first time, people that don't necessarily have a coach or want to kind of see what's going on with it before they go to an academy. Is that guide a what I wish I'd known guide? Is it all the experience that you had not having a coach and now you've bundled it for people that might be in the same boat?
Exactly. I just know how fun the sport can be. And not just jiu-jitsu. For me, it was jiu-jitsu at first that took over my mind. And then it was the boxing and then Muay Thai stuff. And it's endless. And there's so much to learn. It would take us five lifetimes to learn it all. It's so much to learn. So you can't waste any time. If you want to become good, and I know there's so many people out there that want to learn mixed martial arts and learn jiu-jitsu and want to become good because it's so much fun. And I just, I think it's frustrating for people that if they don't have the right guidance. And it takes a long time. You can save a lot of time if you have the right guidance. And I just wanted to help them by creating a product, something, a system that they could use to cut corners. And again, like you said, to save the time that I had to invest in, and, you know, kind of turn off everything else so that I could become, you know, as skilled as I want, as I wanted to become and always envisioned. So, definitely it's nice to be able to help those people. And it's been great, you know, have different students learning what it is. It's an online product. So online training system. So it incorporates a manual that has 18 one-hour workouts, all structured for them so they don't have to think. And it really helps them master the basics in 12 weeks. So they're going to learn all the punches. It's 100-plus videos that they can watch and learn all the basics. And I included, like, a ton of detail, pretty much every detail they need to know to master the technique. And then it has audio files, which is a really cool thing, where they listen to me coaching them. So they put the audio files, the MP3 file in there. In their player, and they pop it in their ear, and it has me coaching them through their shadow butt fighting rounds. So they're punching, kicking. It's almost like I'm right beside them, like I would my own students here, yelling at them and doing different, telling them different details to work on and push them through their workouts. So it incorporates pretty much everything they need to learn some solid striking, some basic ground movements, and get in great shape while developing a solid base.
Mm-hmm. And so this is those videos are on, like, they go to your website after they enroll in the course, and they go to the website and they have the videos there?
Yeah, once they purchase the program, they have full access to MMAQuickStart.com, and that links them to a page where they have they can click on any video that's in the system, and then that corresponds with the techniques that are on the workout plan. So they can, it might have them do the jab 20 times. So they watch the videos, they master the jab details. Then they practice in the workout. So it goes from move to move in the workout. And then after they get to assess their techniques, when they watch the videos later, they have little sheets where they can write down, oh, I was doing the jab, but I was missing this detail. Because I just watched the video again, Jeff says, keep jab a little bit higher here to the left so you don't get punched in the face. They write that down. And next time they do the workout, they're going to have that detail ready on paper in front of them so that they can really perfect the technique and get those details, because it's all about the details. Without the details, you could be practicing improperly. You know, there's a good saying, it's not practice makes perfect, but perfect practice makes perfect. If you practice improperly, you could be thinking you're improving, but you're building a bad habit. Mm-hmm. And it really takes a coach's eye. So in a combination with them watching the video and them being, you know, really tough on themselves and making sure that they really grasp all the details on the videos, they can close any holes that can give an opponent an opportunity to knock them out or do bad things.
So you're incorporating a journal into the program, into the guide.
Just exactly. Like yeah, good point. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, definitely something, teaching them a little bit about how they can do a similar thing that I did. But the nice thing about this is when I learned, there was all these techniques, I didn't know where to start. So I had to do them all.
Yeah.
Where this is pretty much teaching them everything in the order that is ideal for them to learn. The same order that I teach my fighters, the same order that I teach my students, and the best order that I've learned over the years, and that you should start off and develop a foundation. Because YouTube, there are so many videos out there, thousands of videos, but nothing really shows you in sequence the way that they would actually teach you if you were their student. So this is what I tried to do with this program.
Yeah, that's what most people's complaint about YouTube is. It's great that we have this resource, but there's no kind of catalog or sequence or any kind of guidance with it. It's just a mass amount of videos that, you know, might be something you're interested in, might not, you know?
Exactly.
So this is, it has striking and grappling in the course, right? Or is it only striking?
It's striking and groundwork techniques. I wanted to make it solo. I didn't want to, you know, I could have showed some ground stuff and, but I did. I want to be able to people to practice on their own, because I know how hard it is in these places where you don't have people training. It's so hard to find a steady partner that wants to practice with you. You know, Johnny, are you coming over again? I'm sleeping in, man. And then you're like, you feel sick. I want to practice jujitsu, and there's no one's showing up. So you can only rely on yourself. And when you have that fire and you have that dedication, you want to become the best, and you want to fight in the MMA, you want to make the UFC. You don't have the instruction. You can do it. You really can develop. Yeah, at least you can get a great start. That's the thing. This program is going to give them a great start, and they can practice anytime. I made it so they can practice anytime they want. They can get up. They can do the workout. So the ground moves are not like submission holds and things that you need a partner. or you have to wake up your wife to grapple with, and she says, get the hell off me. I've done that a few times. But
haven't we all?
Exactly. It's something, it's just hip escapes, and it's standing in base, and it's different movements that are going to be applied when they start practicing with a partner. So,
okay.
You know, really, I wanted to make them feel comfortable. A lot of guys are also nervous too about going to a gym. So they want to do jujitsu, but they're a little nervous, or they want to do MMA, but that's a little scary because of what they see on TV. Sometimes it feels a little overwhelming. So this program was to make them feel when they get all these basics, they can go to a gym and they're going to say, hey, yeah, that's a hip escape. Boom, that's okay, I got that. They show me that, you're going to be able to kind of impress the instructor because you're going to have already a good fighting stance and you're going to have all the basics and you're going to feel great and be able to build upon that with some solid instruction. So it's a start, but then when they do have to obviously find a school and get training, but it gives them a solid start.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's really cool. I didn't know that that it was a solo program. I thought that it was one of those, you know, like you got the garage training thing going on, you got a buddy there and the both of you want to be, you know, UFC champions. And then, you know, you would use each other to do the jiu-jitsu portion of the, MMA. So that's really cool that they can learn. I didn't even think about that. They can learn stuff like a hip escape, you know, they can shrimp across their living room or whatever and you know, learn how to stand up in base and exactly. Learn basic movements that, you know, that are practically in every move in jiu-jitsu. And then they have that whenever they do go to the school. That's really good.
Yeah, and you know, it's a great workout too. You know, it's the hip escapes and all those motions are great cardio. So for these guys that are new, it also gets them in great shape while they practice moves that they're actually going to use in the future.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of people, it's kind of funny to me. People always talk about, oh, you know, I'm gonna start running in the mornings, and then when I get in shape, then I'll go to the gym. And I think, you know, you're never, that's not gonna work. But if you're already doing something that you want to do, because most people don't like running, or most people that, you know, aren't like runners, most people that do jiu-jitsu and stuff like that, the reason they do that is because running isn't fun for them. So if they were doing something that was already what they wanted to do, then they can get that cardio level up a little bit before they head to the gym.
Exactly. Yeah. Because that's, you know, that, you know, it is start rolling and start hitting bags and you're just gassed out right away if you're not used to it, even if sometimes you have some regular fitness. So just getting used to the punches and relaxing and knowing, having an understanding of the art can make you also be able to train much longer and much more effectively when you actually get to the gym.
Yeah. All right. So you still got a little bit of time. You want to talk about Summer Slammer in the Hammer? Or
sure.
Is this, yeah? So I only noticed, I went to the website, slammerinthehammer.com, I think it was, or something like that. And it seemed like you only had one show, but it seemed like it was a good success. I saw a report from the Fight Network, and they looked like some really good fights, and it looked like it was a good show. How was it promoting an event?
It was probably one of the hardest jobs I've ever done in my life. It was tough, but it was so, you know, I jumped at the opportunity because I was my partner approached me to do it in my city, and with my city, Hamilton, the people showed me so much support in my career, and just being, they're awesome people. I just wanted to be able to be, give them back, you know, the form of high quality MMA entertainment in our city. So it was such an honor to be able to do that. And everything went really well. I was happy. The fighters did phenomenal. We had 7 fights and 6 fights went to finish, but they weren't quick. The fights were evenly matched up and there were some KOs and some great submissions. And one fight went to decision. It was a war. And we had a lot of tough guys on the card. We had, Francis Carmont went to the UFC after winning on our card. We had Darren Cruikshanks doing really well. And we had a lot of local guys that were tough. And it was a fantastic, fantastic night. It couldn't have went better.
Yeah,
but it was a lot of work, and it was very. It was definitely a learning experience, but everything came together in the end. You know?
So, you're gonna have another show, or was that a one-time deal?
We're talking about it. We're in talks now to see what we're gonna do next, but. Yeah, we're not sure 100% what we're going to do. Nothing's set in stone right now, but I'll keep you updated.
You know, I'm kind of curious about this, and I intend to try to get some promoters on the show, and I don't know how open they're going to be about it, and I don't know how open you're willing to be about it, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of smaller shows, or, you know, consistently smaller shows. Like, you know, somebody will set up a show, and they'll do one, and then you never hear from them again. And you said it was a lot of work. Is it not worth the reward? Is that why there's not so many shows, you know, like amateur and you know, like B-level MMA shows?
Well, the thing with Ontario, it's a whole different thing. You have to go big or you can't get into it. our show had 3,500 people. So for a first show, I think we had one of the highest attendance in Ontario shows outside of UFC, of course, with 55,000. But yeah, we had a great turnout. And it's tough because you're on the same playing field as the UFC in Ontario too. So you're paying a lot of the same fees, and it's not, you can't really go with a small show, and there's no amateur here. So you have to go big. There's a lot of different fees behind the scenes, and everything adds up. So it's definitely it's a tough road. You got to make sure you get sponsorship, and you got to cover all your costs, and that's why I think last year there was more shows. I think a few will drop off this year, and you know, I don't know how it is in the United States and different states, but you know, if there's different scales and you can cut your costs, I think there'll be a lot more shows. So for the first year in Ontario, but the good thing is it's run professionally. So then, because everybody, like you know, is when MMA is so popular that anybody and everybody wants to jump in and try to make a few dollars from it, which is understandable. Such a popular sport, but this way, when it's big and it's done professionally, you know that your fighters are safe. The show is going to be solid, and you know, people are really serious about doing it.